curriculum that could go into the next century and do something with it? Well, I think the first thing that we should have to have that is a complete revision of education. The word itself carries the secret of itself. The word education comes from a word which means to draw forth or to bring forth. We interpret it as something to cram in, which is a mistake to start with. Education is to release the conscious desire of the individual to think reasonably. Education is to use the mind purposefully and to establish purposes by which the mental energies are properly employed. Education is therefore the victory of growth over the victory of profit and loss. All these things mean that actually education is to prepare the person for citizenship in a way of life which he likes to believe is important. If it is important, then he must protect it. If he doesn't protect it, he doesn't believe it. The idea of somebody else protecting it must not carry on, or we'll go nowhere. The first problem, then, is to get an education started that is fundamental. First, upon the fundamental of integrity, that actual honesty is the key to survival. No nation can live without it. No family can live without it. No person can live without it. This is essential. If we do not have that, we are going to have the chaos we have now. We're going to have 160 nations fighting each other, or at least at sword points. We're going to have misunderstandings, bankruptcies. We're going to have all kinds of exploitations, misrepresentations, and misuse of funds and authority. All this will happen unless we have integrity. And the only way we can have integrity is to believe in it. To believe in it to the degree that we will cooperate with others of similar integrity, but withdraw our cooperation from those who are lacking in it. We do not need to go out and persecute people, but if they do not reveal a reasonable degree of honesty, we may not necessarily continue to patronize their products or participate in their way of life. The beginning, then, we have is an educational review that ends up with a golden rule, or the Ten Commandments, or the Sermon on the Mount, or the wisdom of Confucius, the teachings of Buddha, the mathematical genius of Pythagoras, the mysticism of Christ. We have these things. We don't even teach them except on rare occasions. We cannot get a word of them into the practical or popular learning. We can get nothing but sarcasm and sinecure. But the basis of the fact is that if we do this and continue with it, we will make another century of dissension. Now, if we try to go into the next century with the educational facilities of today, what's going to happen? We're going to find that we're going to run out of everything. We have to conserve just in order to survive. We cannot have many more cars, or we can't use them at all. And that wouldn't be much of an overstatement. We can't have many more cars because of the petroleum problem. We are gradually exhausting the resources of the planet. And many of these resources are irreplaceable. We can't replace them. The only real resource of importance that we can replace is wood. We can replace this, but for almost everything else, when it's gone, it's gone. And it will take thousands of years of extra austerity to restore even a fragment of it. So everything we have is running out from misuse, waste, and abuse. And no one seems to believe that this means that virtue means to conserve. It doesn't really do anything to tell us that there are new ways of building a life. Supposing we decided that we can't afford the luxury living that we have today, is this going to decimate us beyond all hope? Not really, because most people are sick and tired of what we do have, but do not know anything better. Actually, the simple life is a life in which the individual can release his own internal resources. He can learn to think. He can learn to be a friend. He can learn to study things that will advance his character. He can develop interest in arts and in all kinds of meaning and in science. He can do all these things if he does them from a heart focus of integrity within himself. If he is willing to assume the realities of life, he can study anything he wants. But if his only interest in studying is to find something that he can make an extra dollar from, then the whole theory of education falls apart. We should simplify material life in order that the mind, the soul, and the upper metaphysical parts of ourselves have a chance to express. We will find a wealth of value there that we have never even suspected that we had. We will find that we have been wasting ages on dross when we could have known the true gold of wisdom. We should also learn that true knowledge is not boresome, is not academically ponderous, and does not mean that we must live a stuffy and more or less cynical life. Knowledge, in its truest sense, is an open door to happiness. It is the way in which we can do everything that is right because it is right and be proud we've done it. Now we are ashamed to be right in many instances because it differs from the popular practical policies of the day. So it is very important for the individual to know that the whole thing rests with him. We can have new elections. We can elect different people. We may occasionally get a good one. Sometimes the law of averages will work out. But the mere fact of this does not mean much. The real fact lies in the probability that the time will come when the human being is self-governing. And when he is self-governing, then he doesn't need to worry about any of the other forms of government. He can have any form he wants as long as he handles it correctly. He can study any subject that he wants, as long as he knows in his own heart that that substance is part, or that subject, is part of a greater reality. It is in many cases, in Oriental and Occidental learning, the idea of the guru teaching system has had strength. The Greeks had it very strongly, the Latins less, but some. The Germanic and Nordic tribes were very much involved in it, and of course it was all over Asia. That the guru system was the final system in which instruction was in the hands of persons dedicated to a religious life. This does not mean that this religious teacher, the guru, will do nothing but sing psalms or preach sermons. The guru was a person of mature learning. He was the ideal father or grandfather of a family. He may have not had any family of his own, but his world was his family. The guru taught anything that the individual needed to know, mathematics, or astronomy, or science, or legislation, or jurisprudence. All these things the guru could teach and did. But he taught them in an environment of integrities. He taught them as great spiritual realities, part of a divine plan for the perfection of the creation. He had all the knowledge that we have, but he had something else, a deep, abiding faith. Faith in something that was immutable and immovable, which he had to obey, but which in the last analysis could be the subject of an unlimited affection. That which is the root of life is the most lovable thing that can exist, the reality itself. So the guru system taught these young people. It taught them to go out. They became householders. They raised families. And when they came to a certain age, they retired. And when they retired, they returned to the ashram. The teaching they received before they were 20 years old came back on them or to them in their 60s. And they returned to the holy life. And because of the fact that they had lived it between, learned it early, and had it in their older years, they died in peace with all living things. They were never bored by their age because they were always in the presence of the divine. This system may not be practical for us, but it did a great deal to help these people to keep principles and to be willing to suffer for causes that were worthwhile. Another very important thing is that the average person in teaching is unable to discipline a child. We do not know how to make the child obedient without thrashing it or doing something that hurts it and which in turn hurts us. The answer is very simple. We start with the child. We will start perhaps before the child is born, and we will have a happy little home. The mother and father love each other. They're not perfect, but affection dominates that little household. Then along comes the child, and long before that child is born, the love of those two parents is already working in the embryo. It is working in the magnetic and etheric field of that child. He is being educated already by the first education of all, the mother school of Comenius. And finally the child is born, and it is born into a home where it is happy, where its parents are glad to have it, where the conception is intentional, and that they are going to make this a major part of their lives. They're not going to shunt it off onto keepers and watchers and things of this nature. They're going to stay and take care of it because it is there to do and to serve. And out of proper parenthood, this little thing grows up to kindergarten age and then begins to contact the outer world. And there, to the average parent, is the most dangerous moment of life because it doesn't know what's going to do. That suddenly the child is escaping. It is going to come part of this world that is very far from perfect. But it's not as bad as that. The child has had 7 years of basic indoctrination. Not the indoctrination of words or the reading of nice sermons, but the indoctrination of actually being part of something that is lovable, that is honest, that is true, that is clean, that is honorable. That child going into the school is not going to fall immediately for the corruptions of others who are not brought up that well. A little later, it's not going to say yes to the infiltration of drugs. It's not going to become an alcoholic. It's not going to do any of these things because in the root of itself, it has experienced truth. It has experienced reality in the womb of the mother. And this it can never lose. And even if it has its troubles later, these troubles will have something inside of her or him that will resist that which is corruption. There will be something that will say, I can't do it. I don't feel right. It is contrary to what I learned in the first 5 years of life. And because those are the formative years when the child is taking hold of the body, is learning to become aware of this world, these are the most important years of its life. So if we can get the child up to about 7 or 8 years old, during that period, from 1 to 8, we can then bring that child to the realization that this is a beautiful world, that this is a wonderful place to be, that this is an opportunity to have wonderful friendships and deep affections, and in due time become parents of another generation. If we can teach young people this type of thing, then we can send them to the public school, and they will change the school. But if this same family divorces before the child is born, or shortly thereafter, or is nagging and fussing all the time, is competing in all activities, is ambitious for early advancement, and so forth, the little thing has no foundation. It believes that life is conflict because it is all it has ever known. And where this happens, things don't work so well. So the beginning of the reformation of education is that the child shall receive it from its own parents, not in ABCs or 2, 4s, and 6s, but in the simple experience of life as a beautiful necessity in which it is important that we each keep our values, enrich our values, and stay clean regardless of the circumstances around us in life. If we can do this, we're going to have a good start for an educational policy. And I think it is coming. Each day now we hear more about these changes that must happen. We see more and more of the unfortunate consequences of neglecting integrities for the sake of profit. If there's any major improvement in the next century, it is that we will work for truth and for principles, and not solely for profits. Because profit is something that is just beyond the capacity of our planet. We cannot be a planet of continual profit for all concerned. It is not possible either that we should allow the part that doesn't profit to simply rot or go into revolution after revolution in an effort to restore some kind of balance. All these things are foolish, unnecessary, and evidences of excessive egotism, of the unwillingness to face the realities of life. So we think that even now, we see in the paper, we read, we observe in television, occasional programs in which we know that people are trying. But most people are trying without knowing how to do it. They try to write in the name of the best candidate and all that type of thing, but they really do not know how to get at the substance of the needed changes. If any of these people have small children, there's the first place where the job should be done. Because one good child starting out in life can save an empire. And we do not know who is going to do it, but it has to be someone whose dedications are stronger than their ambitions. This is the way we have to face it. For out of this mysterious gate through which we all pass into life, is this endless flood of souls coming into birth and rebirth, coming in to have their part in the forming of a new world. And our best thing we can do is, when they come in, is to give them the first lessons, the first grade in a profitable and proper way of living. And those first lessons will be of greater value to them throughout the life and to the future of the world than all the academic degrees they can possibly earn. It is very important now that education becomes a part of public life. We as people must educate each other. The system of education cannot escape from the boundaries with which it has been limited. It is not all the fault of the educator. It is the fault of those who do not want education. All they want is a course in profit-making. They do not want to become wise, they want to become rich. They do not want to become the sincere servants of a good cause. They want to be distinguished citizens, notable for their philanthropies, and many of their philanthropies include supporting the colleges. It is all a kind of twisted pattern that is wrong. We can't break all these rules, but we can make sure that we do not break them in the most fundamental of all rules. To get new lives started right on this planet. That instead of trying to take care of a lot of things we can't do much about anyway, that we should try to take care of these important and desperately necessary things that face us today. It seems, therefore, that if we work together, we're going to have a new kind of education. An education that is going to put idealism first, which is going to prove that divine things are stronger and more real than material things. We are going to find the necessity of a kind of worship in which integrities become associated with our daily life. We may not know where honesty comes from or why we need it, but if we study history, we know we have to have it. And these things will gradually clear themselves up if we rewrite a lot of curricula and get a new point of view on some of these essential purposes of life. I think that we can safely say that the mother school has to come back, and maybe father will be the athletic teacher in the school, and some of the other children will be in the higher grades, and some will be in the lower grades, and some will be taken care of by the children in the higher grades. All that is wonderful. It is part of life. And if these people in those formative years are happy and love each other and work together for each other and realize that happiness for one means happiness for all and that there can be no happiness for one at the expense of the others, when these things become more or less apparent, we will for the first time in the history of the world be practical. We are told that we must be practical. And to us, practical has meant to be wealthy and stylish luxurious. Actually, to be practical means that which accomplishes the greatest good for the greatest number. And we achieve this by making the changes in our own lives. More better homes in our world will reduce wars and revolutions, destroy these various delinquencies, get rid of these fanatical dictators, and all these things which are part of a great materialistic tragedy, which we have permitted simply because we have had the thoughtfulness or the depth of understanding to realize that we have to grow sometimes through experience, that we have to suffer a little as we go along, but that this suffering, if it produces in the end a better world for all of us, is well worth what it costs. We have to learn in the 21st century that education begins in the home and spreads from there throughout the world, and that the individual who starts out right has a beginning that is true, has ideas and motives that are true, will come out all right. I know several families in which the family has never been particularly rich, never will be rich, but they are very happy families. They are much more happy than these families in which extravagance is the order of the day. They have what they have because, as a family, they are caring. They love each other. They work together. They have fun together. And each one has a deep belief in the integrities of the family, and this will always attempt to live it. These families are happy, which is much we can say for them, but you can seldom as ever find a family of great wealth, authority, and power that is happy. There is nothing but spoilage, there is nothing but conflict, there is nothing but aggression in these families which are dominated by the wealth syndrome. Actually, therefore, we should all be educating ourselves a little bit for what's coming on. If we're in that age group where it's not so too likely that we will pass into the 21st century, then we have to work with those who are older. Perhaps we need to work with those of our own age group, who are feeling the misery and mystery of age, that there is nothing there to worry about. All that is necessary is that the moment we start to find ourselves learning. The woman said to the Greek philosopher, who was lying on his couch in the back of a little adobe house in Athens, and the friends were all gathered in the front room because he was dying, and they were all there to be with Grandpa to the end. And one of them happened to look into the back room where he was lying on his couch, and he was sitting up a little bit, and he had his hand to his ear, and he was listening attentively to the gossip in the front room. And the neighbor said, "But Grandfather, why are you listening like this? You're going to die in a few hours." And the grandpa said, "Well, that's probably true, but I'm alive now, and while I'm alive, I can learn." Well, that's a good attitude. While we are alive, we can earn and learn. While we are alive, we can earn a better destiny. We can make a great move of some kind in the closing years of life that reverses the entire pattern of our misdeeds and mistakes. Or we can very quietly retire into the realization of what we have tried to do and the things we have dreamed about and the hopes we have of the future. But before we can have a safe world in which it is proper to live, human beings as a group must believe in the future. They must believe that if they are young, that part of their future is here. If they are old, most of their future is elsewhere. But in any case, there is future. "Certain is death for the living, certain is birth for the dead," says the Bhagavad Gita. And we are all here in an eternal quest for realities, for truths, and for that kind of inner wisdom, which is that peace, which is passive understanding. We are here to grow, to learn, to love, and to serve. And if we fulfill these requirements, we will never fail very much. And a world that becomes aware of this and begins to try to do it will gain very rapidly. And I think between now and the end of this century, we will find major changes in the Board of Education. We will find new approach to the idea of teaching. we shall try to understand why a student graduating cum laude from the university is on narcotics at the same time. These things are presenting to us, as in the case of the marijuana, and cocaine, the heroin, alcohol. These are all presenting to us the fact that as individuals, we have not been taught to be strong. We have not been taught to cling to what is right. We have not been taught to put the good of ourselves at the head of our list. We know these various bad habits were likely to kill us or destroy us so completely that we are helpless. But it never occurs to us still. This promise of a moment in which we feel 10 feet tall is the most important thing. If we die tomorrow, that is not so important. But this feeling of being 10 feet high has gotten into us. Actually, at this moment, the modern world feels 10 feet high. Everything is tremendous. There are little problems, like world wars, but they'll pass. Everyone will be rich. Everyone will live his own life. No one will be responsible. The cities will take care of the children. Some other city will take care of the aged, and each individual is on his own for a fun generation. Now, this is what might be termed a high. This is the same thing as taking cocaine and feeling as though you rule the world. Our world has been fed on various false drugs, and not in actual terms, but false policies, false doctrines, false beliefs, false allegiances, until we now feel that we are just about the most perfect creatures that ever lived. But if we take a second look, we have to revise the estimate somewhat. We have to realize that in this last generation, we have broken more natural laws. We have misused more natural products. We have involved ourselves in more unnatural situations than ever before in history. We have broken rules that our ancestors didn't even know existed. We've done everything that we could just to do what we want to right now, and the circumstances don't mean anything because we're going to be dead anyway. This thinking has got to go. And if it doesn't go any other way, it will go in great wars or atomic bombing. But it doesn't need to. And we are assured that if many fall because of their iniquities, the just person shall not be moved. We will not fall, individually or collectively, if we keep the rules, serve the truth, and do our daily chores as best we can. We will also have peace of mind, peace of soul, and because of doing it right, we have to have better health. And the individual will no longer drop dead with a heart attack at 49. All these things come as the result of changes in our way of life. Live straight and we'll live straight. Live straight and things will work right. Do all the things that we can to the best of our ability and pass on to our descendants a heritage of good examples. If we will do these things, we will not have much else to worry about. We can then go peacefully along in the day, enjoying the arts and crafts, partaking in all those things which are useful, but avoiding carefully any form of activity which is unnecessarily harmful to any other creature. Live harmlessly, as Gandhi said. Live as far as we can to help the world rather than to hurt it. Not out to slaughter animals, but to take care of them. Not out to slaughter human beings, but to save them. And not out simply to enslave, technically, even though we do not use the term, millions of human beings. All these things will cause trouble. If we correct the mistakes in ourselves, we will end most of the world's suffering. And the school should teach this. The school should teach that every student is a potential force for good if he is willing to accept the responsibility. And if he is not willing to accept the responsibility, it is foolish indeed for the community to educate him. But he will, with proper example and proper encouragement and proper inspiration, accept this challenge of better living. He will be proud that he can be part of a generation that makes a contribution to the future. All these things are possible to him, and he can do them. but he needs a little help at this time. The schooling should begin to teach him what he should be instead of preparing him to fit like a robot into some prearranged economic system. The whole theory of robot economics that we know now is a dying theory. It will not last. It cannot go on. It can never be profitable. But it will fascinate all kinds of people who love gadgets and who think of all change as progress. And every new complication is a thing of beauty and a joy forever. This type of thinking is not any good. But if we work with it properly, and the school will get back of getting to the truth of the matter, getting to the facts that we know are true, and which we can prove from 5,000 years of written history and 50 years of current miseries. All these things we can learn, understand, and take into consideration. If we can get together, we can become the members of a planet, and the earth itself will be the great schoolhouse. Here we will all be here as O.B. Sedanian students in the College of the Holy Spirit. That was what the Rosicrucians called it. We all are in school. It doesn't show from here much, but this is the Little Road Schoolhouse. And we're all in it. And it's time to graduate more students with honorable marks for having done it right. The time of playing hooky and being prudent and not doing the lesson and trying to escape the responsibilities, these times are passing, because the world simply cannot support the abuses which have been heaped upon it. The time has come for the regeneration of these things, a universal reformation of human relationships, with the emphasis upon a unity in the world family and the recognition that we are all one group, and that this group depends upon its own inner structure for survival. And if we work together, we can survive, we can protect resources, we can do all kinds of good things. But if we keep on paying other people to do it for us, we're going to be in the same condition we're in now indefinitely. It's time for us to do our own thing and do it right. What is that?